WFAE Podcasting is funded by Corporate Information Technologies, helping businesses take a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
906.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Thousands of children will be making the move this fall from elementary to middle school. Not a big deal, you say. Well, think back to when you made the leap. It may seem insignificant now, but at the time, you may have struggled. Many, many children do. It's a time in life when friendships change, bodies are changing, and a child's relationship with their parents may also change. It can be frightening, bewildering, even overwhelming for the child and for the parents. So today we've assembled a panel of experts to help you help your child through this transition. Wes Culbreth is a middle school guidance counselor at Walter G. Byers School in the new Project Lift Zone at CMS, who also contributed to the Hero's Pursuit curriculum from Cognition House Publishing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
What is Hero's Pursuit? Well, if you're a regular listener, you've heard from the founder of that organization, Michelle Eichardt. She is the founder of Athena's Path and Michelle in the Middle as well. That's michelleinthemiddle.com, by the way. These are two organizations and a website designed to help middle school girls, boys, and their parents navigate the challenges of that time in their life. And she is back with us again. Good to see you as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
You're very welcome. And Dr. Melissa Holmes is co-founder of Girlology, which focuses on emerging sexuality in girls' health. Dr. Holmes is an OBGYN and mother of three girls, and through Girlology, she tries to educate and inspire girls to build accurate knowledge, grow in confidence, and choose healthy behaviors. She has also started something called Boyology, and she joins us from Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I know that you're all involved, or many of you are involved, in what is called MichelleInTheMiddle.com's Right in the Middle seminars, which will be taking place August 15th, right?
That's right. It's a mother-daughter workshop we're having here in Charlotte.
And we'll talk about that a little bit as we go through. In Western society, we tend to put people in categories. In this case, school kids suddenly become middle schoolers after leaving, the fifth, sixth grade, somewhere in there? And then they become high schoolers. And many of the difficulties that children face when they become middle schoolers result from where they are, as we said, in their physical, their emotional, their mental lives as they change. But how many of the problems that they face because of that are also exacerbated because they suddenly become this other category? They suddenly become middle schoolers. Therefore, they have to change. Something has changed. Who should answer that? I'm not sure.
I can speak to that a little bit. There's several issues that crop up when you make the transition to middle school. One is, obviously, you go from being the top of the heap as a fifth grader in elementary school to back at the bottom of the heap where you're the youngest person in the school. So that puts some additional pressure on the child. The other thing that occurs with middle school kids is the switch in where they're motivated from. They tend to be more motivated to choose behaviors, choose their dress, choose their activities based on peer approval versus parent approval. And that's sort of a common benchmark of development that occurs right in that time frame.
And Michelle, a lot of what you've talked about in the past on this program, when you've been here to talk about Athena's Path and about Hero's Pursuit, has been involved in that peer pressure, the peer pressure that kids experience.
Sure. Pardon me. So peer pressure is really important at this time of life, and a lot of us think of it as a negative, but it really can have a positive twist too. And one thing that I would love for parents to begin thinking about is, what are the upsides of peer pressure? One of them is, unless your kid starts to think about how and where they belong in their social world, they're really never going to leave your social world. And so many of us go through this phase when our kids are in middle school of, this is really agonizing. My kid's got an independent streak now, or they're becoming defiant. That's all actually really good. It means that they're starting to think about ways that they can live and survive in a world where you don't rule the roost. And that's ultimately what we want for our kids. It's just a hard thing to wrap our brains around.
So who is it harder on, the kids or the parents?
Oh, it depends on who you ask. Each would say themselves. I think parents, it's really difficult when you've made all of the decisions up to that point and you've solved all the problems to take a step back and say, okay, now you go and do this. And I think it's critical that parents do begin to do that. But for kids, I mean, for those of us who remember middle school with some anxiety still, mm-hmm. It's a time that affects us and stays with us for a very long time.
Maybe I'm fortunate because I went to a school that had 1 through 8. We didn't have, although 7th and 8th was in a different building than the 1st through 6th grades. But it seems to me that middle school keeps shifting. It used to be 7th. It used to be called junior high, and that was 7th and 8th.
Right.
Middle school is what?
Depending on which county you're in,
yeah.
Something different. I've worked in, when I did my undergraduate degree, I worked in a county where all the schools were K through 8. And the developmental shift that takes place in adolescence is a range. So there's really no strict definition. I went to school the same way you did. It was a 7 through 9 junior high. And then my senior year, it became a 9-12 high school and a 6-8 middle school. So it sort of depends on which way the winds of politics are blowing.
In Charlotte-Mecklenburg, what is middle school defined?
Middle school is 6 through 8 at this point in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
All right. And doctor, in South Carolina, what is it defined as?
It's 6 through 8 in most of the public schools, and there are some private schools that start at 5, and have 5 through 8.
How old are you in 6th grade? I don't remember.
11 and 12.
About 11. But now, some of the issues that happen when you're in middle school have to do with what we've just been talking about, but also they have to do with raging hormones.
Yes.
Do the hormones begin raging, doctor, at 11? Really?
The hormones, you know, I wouldn't say raging. They begin to trickle around 10 or 11 for most kids, and that's just, you know, it's just the beginning of it. But what really, I think, is the thing that triggers these behaviors that we classify as stereotypical middle school behaviors is really some changes happening in the brain that are influenced by hormones but not caused by hormones necessarily. So we like to blame all their behaviors on raging hormones, but really it's brain changes that are happening. And the hormones affect other behaviors when they start feeling romantic towards other people and they have their body changes. That's when the hormones start in. And it varies. For girls, it can start as early as 7 or 8, which is really kind of scary. But on average, it's definitely by 10.
Wow.
And in boys, it's usually about 10 to 12.
Yes, I was going to say boys are generally behind girls in that developmental area. Is that changing at all with what we see changing in the world today? For some reason, puberty seems to have an earlier onset than it used to. Is it still the same? Is it still the case that boys are later than girls?
It's still the case that boys are later than girls, but there is a trend really worldwide that puberty is starting earlier for girls. And the only change that's really starting earlier for them is their breast development.
Mm.
All the other changes are staying about the same as they have been for the past 50 or 60.
But then that leads us into the question of early body image problems, earlier body
sure.
image problems, I suppose. So are we going to have this conversation in 10 years about fourth grade, third graders, and how the change is happening then?
Some of us are already having that conversation and helping, you know, the younger kids address these body changes before they even get to middle school.
Wow. Who has the most difficult time? And I'd like to hear from both the doctor and all three of you, actually, because you all deal with this. Who has the most difficult time, boys or girls, with this period in their life?
I think they're all very difficult, but they're difficult in different ways. The boys tend to, as they go through this, want to demonstrate success at something and sort of be top of the heap in some category or another. And they sort of express those difficulties in a different way than their female counterparts do.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're less likely to hear about it from boys. Boys are less verbal at this age, particularly with their parents. And so girls, too, become less verbal with their parents. But girls are much more likely to cry about something that's bothering them or to talk about it, and boys are more likely to seal it up. I think for girls, it's much more difficult in terms of the social drama that happens. Boys are able to escape that for a little while longer, and it starts earlier for girls, just like the puberty stuff that Dr. Holmes was talking about. I hear from parents of second graders and third graders saying this mean girl stuff is already going on well before middle school.
Yeah, girls are mean.
They're not.
I never knew that.
They're trying on new personalities. They're trying to figure out who they want to be and how they want to act. But it does lead to some mean behavior sometimes.
Yeah, I never knew this.
The good news is they come back from those bad behaviors, most of them.
Well,
not
some.
All of them. It depends
some
on
do.
The parenting.
I think the good news is that you can teach the correct behavior. I think a lot of people look at adolescence and say, it's a terrible time and it's a rite of passage and we need to just let them get through it and we'll meet you on the other side because
yeah.
It's so yucky. But the truth is you really can teach the behavior and the empathy that you want to.
And that whole piece we're discussing about, too, is a lot of times why boys tend to be more physically aggressive is because they do bottle it up, they don't discuss it, and they tend to act on their emotions more than discuss them.
Well, is that the same thing then? I mean, if guys are trying to be top of the heap and show who's the more macho dude in the group, isn't that the same thing as girls being mean to each other? They're trying to assert themselves and work their way up the social platform?
I think it all relates to, yes, that, to understanding the new social order. I mean, they've gone from having playdates arranged to them and having very structured time in school, even walking in a line in the hall, mm-hmm. to suddenly having to figure out, where do I exist in this world of my peers? I mean, that's really sort of a key message for parents, is that your child's world is evolved now from being your world into the world of their peers. That's the world that they're going to be successful in as an adult. And if they can begin to navigate that with some success in middle school, it's going to set them up for success even, you know, into high school and college and careers.
I know that you do talks on this topic, and I know that in your talks, in some of your talks, you show pictures of yourself.
I do.
In middle school. And you ask,
I've seen those pictures.
And you ask the audience, and sometimes the audience is middle school kids.
Often, yes.
To pick you out.
And they never do.
And they never do. They pick out the girl in the blue sweater next to the guy in the bow tie, and you say, no, I'm the guy in the bow tie.
I was the guy in the bow tie. I had a home done haircut, and I had oversized glasses, and I had, I don't know why, silver spoons was really popular at the time.
Yeah.
And I had this image that I wanted to be like Ricky Schroeder because I switched from public to private school. So my idea was, that's what a private school kid looks like, an executive. So I bought a bow tie. It was a feminine version. It was a floppy silk bow tie, but nonetheless.
So were you one of the mean girls, or were you one of the girls being picked on by the mean girls?
I was horribly picked on. I was such an outcast in middle school. It was terrible for me. And it's why I do what I do now, mm-hmm. really.
So what's it like to be the victim of the mean girl syndrome?
It's interesting asking me that now. I can tell you at the time that it was happening, I was very closed off. I didn't tell my parents that I was being made fun of. I was being bullied by girls who were a grade older than me after having a couple friends in my grade reject me. So I became kind of an island. I was by myself. I refused to talk about it because, as Dr. Holmes can talk about a little bit with brain development, one of the biggest fears of a middle schooler is not being normal.
Mm.
I didn't dare admit to my parents that I wasn't normal. Mm. I didn't want to not be like other kids, so I kept very quiet about it. And then that sort of festers, and it really manifested through high school. I didn't engage in my schoolwork. That was one of the biggest byproducts. I really didn't want to raise my hand. I didn't want to draw attention to myself. And my goal was to be invisible because I didn't want anyone to look at me and think, she's not normal.
I only have a minute left in this segment, but doctor, can you talk about that a little bit, that brain development thing and what that feels like to a kid who wants to be normal and isn't sure that they are?
Yeah, you know, that's actually a major developmental milestone from a developmental standpoint. They have to answer that question, am I normal, during this early phase of middle school. And it's a tough question to answer. They need some reinforcement from their parents, and more importantly, they need it from their peers. And if they don't come out of that asking phase, feeling that they are normal, then they don't move into the next phase in a healthy way.
What's the next phase?
It's a really important question to answer. The next phase is, am I lovable? And that's where we get into girls that will do anything to have a boyfriend and boys that'll act crazy, you know, to get the girl's attention. And that's where you see, that's where people talk about those raging hormones that you're talking about with, you know, puppy love and going out and sexual risk-taking among late middle schoolers.
I have 30 seconds. It would seem to me that this would be easily solvable by having seminar classes for kids in that age group to say, here's what you're going through and here's what the answers are. Why don't we do that?
Girlology does that. That's exactly what we do.
So does Athena's Path.
We just try to normalize, you know, everything that they're going through and help them recognize that they're not in this alone.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk about what you do in those organizations and why it isn't done officially in the schools. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and UNC Charlotte's Professional Science Masters in Health Informatics, using the power of information technology to transform healthcare. Details at hi.uncc.edu. Well, we are heading into the home stretch of days leading up to the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. Just think, a a month and a half from now, we will never speak those words again. But as we head into the home stretch, we're launching a series of examinations of the tentpole issues that Democratic delegates will likely be debating, supporting, or rejecting. Some are obvious, like the economy. Others, not so much. So we'll start with an overview of the likely planks in the Democratic platform, how they are decided upon, and how the GOP is likely to view them tomorrow at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, the number of active hate groups in the U.S. has doubled in the last decade. What's behind the rise and new efforts to track their activities?
Join Diane for that conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the transition to middle school and the challenges faced by children, parents, and teachers because of the changes that these kids are going through. And we're doing this with Michelle Eichardt, who's founder of Athena's Path, Heroes Pursuit, and Michelle in the Middle, all of which focus on this age group. Wes Culbreth is a guidance counselor at Walter Byers School and is part of this Heroes Pursuit curriculum, which we're going to talk about. And Dr. Melissa Holmes is an OBGYN and co-founder of two organizations, one called Girlology, the other called Boyology. And I guess that the names are self-explanatory, and she joins us by phone. We were talking just before the break about how it seems to me, at least as a layperson, very disconnected from this, that a lot of these problems, this desire to feel normal at that age and to know that you fit in, this drive to make sure that you are just like everybody else when you're not and you can't be and you don't really want to be, could easily be solved if we just talked about it with these kids. And Athena's Path and Heroes Pursuit does that. Boy and Girlology do that. Do we do it officially in the schools? Why don't we do it officially in the schools?
Well, there are several areas that we do handle that officially in the schools. There are several schools in CMS that are using the Heroes Pursuit and Athena's Path program to facilitate those conversations. And for those principals with the vision to adopt those programs, there's been great success. The school culture and climate is growing more positive. Even without those programs, school counselors engage in several different types of activities to help kind of get ahead of the curve on those things. We will run group counseling sessions for kids with common issues. We tend to go in and do classroom guidance to try to facilitate some discussion on the challenges of adolescence. The school does have a curriculum for human sexuality, growth, and development. However, because it's a public school, sometimes it can be kind of sterile. So we hit it from several different approaches.
And I know that you've contributed to the Heroes Pursuit curriculum from Cognition House Publishing. I guess you're getting your whole program published and inserted. I know that you're in several schools around the country.
We're in schools around the country. We're in five states now, and Wes is a contributor to the curriculum for boys, and he's taught the program as well.
Okay. Now let's talk about these two programs. We've talked about this before, but let's talk about Athena's Path, which is the girls' component.
Yes.
And Heroes Pursuit, which is the boys' component. Just to explain them briefly.
Sure. So about 10 years ago, I was working with kids in middle school, and I saw this great need to address the new social world that they were entering. We do a lot of work to try to prepare kids for how to take tests and how to study and the sort of academic ramp up to middle school. But I was seeing, I was working as a private tutor, and I was seeing a lot of kids who were being so heavily distracted by what was happening socially that they couldn't concentrate on academics. And as I mentioned, that was my story. So I created a curriculum that sort of wrapped itself around the middle school social scene with themes of leadership and self-esteem and problem solving, and wrote lessons and now package it as a site license and sell it to schools who teach it themselves during the school day as a class. So a kid might go from French class to Athena's Path and on to math.
Now, I understand how you would know about the girls' component, Athena's Path, because you had experience
right
with it while you were in middle school. How did you develop the boys'
That's such a fair and good question. I didn't for a long time. I resisted it. I had parents and schools coming to me saying, well, what do we do with our boys? We've got our girls doing Athena's Path. And I thought, well, I'm not a guy, and I don't think I can write something that's really authentic for boys. And so that's where Wes came in, and another former principal from Charlotte, who's since moved away, Jeremy Spielman, who mm-hmm. was at Charlotte Secondary School. And they helped me take the language of Athena's Path and make it understandable and relatable to boys. So, for instance, in Hero's Pursuit, we never say, okay, now it's time to sit down and have a discussion, because that really turns middle school boys off.
They don't want to talk.
Now, so we divided the curriculum into working out and hanging out. Working out, we're doing something hands-on, getting the boys moving around and active. Hanging out, we're processing it, but it's much more casual.
Mm-hmm. Do they understand that they're being manipulated, though? I mean, do they see it that way? Because to me, that's so obvious, but then I'm older than they are.
No, I don't. I think they think it's fun.
No, and the way you sequence the activities, and by leading in with a fun activity, because again, boys tend to be more active and less verbal. Mm-hmm. When you start with a physical activity and then you talk about it, they start to draw the connections and see it, and it's kind of I don't know, you kind of get to it through a back door, but it's a more comfortable way to go.
Meanwhile, Dr. Holmes, who is an OBGYN, has developed two programs, one called Girlology, one called Boyology. I'm assuming that these focus on the biology of what's happening to these kids at this age.
We focus a little bit on the biology. That's the beginning of it. But we've learned over the years that we cannot talk about the biology and the sexuality in a vacuum. We have to talk about body image. We have to talk about healthy relationships. We have to talk about communication and decision making. And so the curriculum has expanded over the years just based on what we've learned about what kids need in order to develop a healthy sexuality as they grow up. So we do. We have our programs. What distinguishes ours from what kids can get in school is that ours are parent-child programs. And our goal in that is that we really, you know, we realize that the schools can't do this job completely because values have to come from the home. And you can't help a kid with their values unless you have the adults who care about them in their lives, you know, present and engaged in the conversations. So we have mothers and daughters come to our Girlology program, and it's actually Guyology, not Boyology, because they like to be guys. and so our Guyology program is for dads and sons. And what that does is we throw a lot of words out there. We put a lot of content out there. We have a lot of fun. We use humor. And we kind of break the ice and get people talking about things that were awkward to talk about so that when they go home, they can continue the conversations. And that's our entire goal. We know we can't cover everything they need to know in a couple of hours. But if they are given the tools to talk about it and good comfort to talk about it, they take it home and they keep talking. And that's the feedback that we get. So it's been a really rewarding process.
Well, that leads me to a couple of questions, because it's my impression that it's at this age, particularly boys don't talk, as you say, but at this age, girls start not liking their moms and boys begin either resenting their dads or trying to one-up them. They're trying to be the man of the house. So they don't talk to each other anymore. The girls don't talk to their mothers. The guys don't talk to their fathers. And nobody talks about sex. So
actually, when you look at the national research on teens and talking about sexuality, they want to talk to their parents more.
Do they?
They do. And they're just not getting it. So by giving parents better ways to communicate with their kids about sex and sexuality and growing up and body image, they do a better job and they are able to talk about it. Now, sure, you know, we don't want parents to be their kid's best friend and be the one that they gossip to about who's doing what and all of that, but we want them to have open communication and be askable. You know, we want the parents to be recognized by their kids as someone who they can go to and get a straightforward answer without the parent freaking out.
But isn't this also the age where they don't like what their parents say because their parents are old fuddy-duddies and they're embarrassed by their parents? And
Some degree. One of the reasons we start our puberty programs in the fourth grade is that they haven't really hit that phase yet. Mm-hmm. And so they come with their parents. They still like their parents. They still want to please their parents. And they learn to talk about it before they get to that more difficult adolescent phase. it is harder to break those barriers in conversation as they get older.
Michelle.
And I think there's also a learning curve for parents there, too, that you need to start when the kids are younger, not just for the benefit of the kids learning how to communicate to the parents, but as Melissa said, for the parents not to freak out. This is what I tell parents all the time. When your child comes to you and they begin to talk to you and confess little bits and pieces of what's happening in their social world at school, remain neutral. The parent whose face scowls or they get outraged or they say, do you want me to call that other kid's parents so they stop doing that to you? That is the most surefire way to have a kid shut the door on you.
Well, that goes back to bullying to a certain degree, because kids who are bullied don't want to tell their parents that they're being bullied,
right?
Because A, they don't want to be embarrassed that they're the victim,
yes,
and B, they don't want the parents to interfere and cause more trouble for them.
Retaliation, right.
So how do you handle that?
So what you
we
do...
We have little buttons we give out in our classes that have a F-O with a red line through it, and we actually have a talk with parents about how it's really important, no matter what you're talking about with your adolescents, that you learn not to freak out. You can freak out in another room. You can go into the other room and do all your freaking out with the other parent or with another adult, but when they freak out in front of their kids, it's exactly as Michelle says. Their kid's never going to come back to them with a question or a concern or something. So parents can be trained and reminded not to freak out.
And the students are very perceptive. Middle school kids pick up on little nuances of body language, tone of voice, and we sometimes think as parents that they're not listening and not paying attention, but they really, really are.
That's a great point. So if you can remain totally neutral, and then I always coach parents when I give my talks, let your kids solve the problem themselves, but your job is to teach them how to brainstorm. So your child's first impulsive reaction may be, well, I'll just post something on Facebook that says how horrible that other person is, for example. And then you as a parent, you have to coach them through sort of, okay, well, then what do you think would happen next? They cannot cognitively jump from A to B unless they think it through out loud. So you have to kind of get your kid to be willing to think through those things with you.
And that is not just inexperience. That is because their brain is being wired even as we speak.
Right.
They need help on wiring the brain.
Right.
Right. They're developing those pathways. And I think one overall statement to help the parents out would be train yourself to ask questions to get your kids to think versus telling. It's asking versus telling.
While you're doing exactly the opposite of what they do in school.
Well, you know, depending on the teacher, there's some inquiry-based teaching that goes on, but that's the way I taught. That's probably why I gravitated towards counseling. I drove the kids crazy asking them questions.
That's my other question. Sometimes, you know, the kids at this age really do want to know the facts. They don't want to hear it from their peers because they know that their peers, even though they sound authoritative, may not really be on target with some things. And they also want advice and guidance and help, but they don't want to go to their parents because that's what a little kid does.
Right.
They have an easier time, it seems to me, to going to another adult figure. Is that where you people come in, you guidance counselors come in?
The school counselors do see a lot of work in that domain. You know, the child never wants to ask the teacher, especially in front of their peers.
Right.
But we have lots of little sidebar conversations, and especially when there's been an issue with some interpersonal conflict, that's where the counselor will come in and help talk them through how it started, what they could have done differently, and we have to be – because we're not administrators and disciplinarians, we take a very non-judgmental approach, help them navigate the situation, think about what to do next time, and that tends to be fairly effective, and they seek us out for that.
One of the things that I know that you face, because parents face it, they probably come to you or you have to deal with the problems that the teacher sends to you, but one of the things that happens with kids is they start to misbehave. They start to act out. They start to assert themselves because they're adults all of a sudden.
They know everything.
Yeah, they know everything. And parents will say, my child never had problems like this before middle school. They didn't have falling grades. They never skipped classes. They never behaved badly. They did what I told them. Now they don't. And you have to deal with that, and so do the teachers. How do you do it? How do you deal with it?
A lot of times I say, I hate to say normal. I always say it's not acceptable that they're doing these things, but it is expected. And a lot of it goes back to that shift in what drives their behavior. Early on, they listen to their parents. They follow their parents somewhat blindly, but as they get older, they begin to develop enough life experience, and they start kind of comparing notes with other kids, and that's when they start pushing the envelope a little bit. Well, how come Johnny gets to stay up till 11 and I get to stay up till 10? And as that develops, that's when that pushing and that jockeying for social position comes into play, and some of that acting out behavior is all tied into the development of their identity, who they are, where they fall in the social pecking order, and again, sometimes children will accept the negative consequence of a school suspension or in-school suspension in exchange for peer approval.
Hmm. In reading about this yesterday, I was reading through several of you sent over some notes about this, and I was reading through them, and one of the things that leapt out to me was, in addition to the new social order that you all talk about, and social dilemmas and opportunities, things like dating and cliques and popularity and self-confidence or the lack of it is a lot to make sense of when you're new to it as a child. But I was surprised that dating is an issue. This is middle school.
Right.
Yeah, I always laugh when my sixth graders say, oh, I'm going with so-and-so. I'm like, really? Where are you going? And how could you get there as a sixth grader?
Was it you that says, or was it you, doctor, that said one of the functions of a parent of a child this age is transportation?
I said that. It's true. They need to get places. They do. But, you know, the dating thing, it's really important that we not just laugh that off, because, as I mentioned earlier, developmentally, they're moving from that am I normal question. Once they decide, once they recognize, okay, I am normal, or I'm not normal, whichever they decide, they're ready to move into the next developmental phase, which is, am I lovable? And there's nothing that proves that they're lovable any more than being somebody's boyfriend or girlfriend to their peers. And so sometimes
at 11?
At 11, at 12, at 13. Now, 11's a little early, but 12 and 13, it's very common. And, you know, sometimes that label, yeah, I'm going out with somebody, mm-hmm. is all they need. They're not really involved in a romantic relationship. There are not true romantic feelings that we think of, but they are answering that question, I am lovable, and they're proving it to their peers because they're going out with somebody. Now, if they've come through that with a healthy answer to the am I normal, they tend to make better decisions in these early relationships about boundaries and, you know, respect and things like that. So it's an interesting developmental task as well.
And I want to get back to this romance thing in a second, but all the things that we've talked about, building self-image, body awareness, body image awareness, et cetera, of dating, are these things that need to be handled at this age so that you can come through it on the other side and by high school be a healthier individual? Or if you don't handle them at this age, are you at risk of continuing these behaviors through high school, which could be disastrous academically, among other ways?
I think one of the keys is making sure your child has a positive self-image, and that will go a long way towards helping them navigate these issues to start with. But they definitely need to be dealt with, because as students develop, they go through different series of issues at different ages. Like we're talking about understanding the identity versus being lovable. You know, there's additional stages of development as we grow into adulthood, and if we fail to resolve one of those key issues early on, it impacts our ability to grow as an adult.
And I know, doctor, that one of the things that you'll be addressing in this right in the middle seminar session on August 15th is tips for handling boys and the middle school romance scene. Are those two different topics, or is one of the same?
It's kind of the same thing. I mean, girls get all excited about wanting to prove that they have a boyfriend or something like that, and they do kind of go all out to prove it. So there are too many pictures on Facebook in these little sultry poses, you know, trying to get attention. There is too much digital information going out. There are too many behaviors that may be beyond what they would really like to be doing, just to make this point. So we point out to girls that, you know, you don't have to go that far. There are, you know, we help them learn to set boundaries on what they are and aren't willing to do to prove that they're lovable.
You mean sexually?
Well, sexually and just relationally.
Mm-hmm.
Acting really silly and all this, and seeking attention, and, you know, just behaviors that are really attention grabbing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it'll turn off their girlfriends, and then they'll start being talked about, and okay, they'll be the victim of some girl meanness.
We'll come back to this, but we have to take a break. Charlotte, okay, Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Isiola Lodge at Linville Golf Club, featuring local fresh cuisine, a Donald Ross Championship golf course, fly fishing, and spa, located off the Blue Ridge Parkway. Information, isiola.com. Well, the number of hate groups in the United States has doubled in the last decade. Diane Rehm and her guests will talk about what's behind the rise and new efforts to track the group's activities. That's coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock. Now, perhaps you have memories of middle school. Perhaps you have a child entering or in middle school. Perhaps you'd like to join our conversation. Look for a lifeline here. 704-926-WFAE is the number. 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
When somebody steals your identity, they only take the good parts, you know? They don't take the rat trap apartment and the depression and the...
Join us next time for the Moth Radio Hour. True stories told live. No notes, no net. From the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
The new season of The Moth continues Friday night at 8 here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Michelle Eichard's with us, founder of Athena's Path Heroes Pursuit, michelleinthemiddle.com. Wes Culbreth, guidance counselor at Walter G. Byers School, and Dr. Melissa Holmes, OBGYN and co-founder of Girl and Guyology in Greenville, South Carolina. And we're talking about the middle school transition and the things that kids go through to get there. One of the things you brought up a second ago, Doctor, was Facebook. This is a new wrinkle in the social scene that parents can or cannot have any awareness of, can or cannot have any control over, certainly if they don't have any awareness of what's going on Facebook. So things happen on Facebook. Pictures get posted on Facebook. Things get said on Facebook. Mean things can be said on Facebook because the kids don't understand the broadcast nature of Facebook and the consequences of broadcasting things. What do you tell parents about regulating or checking on the use of Facebook?
As a parent myself, I make sure that I'm friends with my children when they have a Facebook page.
What if they defriend you?
We'll have to have a conversation about it with the child.
And what if as a friend you go on their page and you see things that are being said or posted and you don't like what you're seeing?
I've been pretty lucky so far that hasn't happened. There's been one or two times I've commented to my son about some things he's posted. But again, that's grounds to have a conversation, and I have to know myself well enough to have that conversation. Even though I'm a guy and we say guys don't talk, I have to, you know, initiate that and probe into, you know, what's behind this? What's behind what you're saying? What's going on here?
I think that's a really great point, is not to come down swiftly and harshly by saying, this is idiotic. How could you do that? Why would you put that on your Facebook page? Don't you realize all the terrible things that are going to happen now? Your child will open up a fake account so that they can post under a different name if they have to in order to get out from under that. But if you approach it the way Wes just described, as asking questions, a very Socratic method, that's going to go a much longer way.
I would say learning that skill carries into all aspects of adolescence, even the way your children dress.
Yes.
If they come down in an outfit that you don't approve of, instead of saying "go change your clothes," it's the same process. What are you trying to accomplish with, you know, why are you? What are you trying to look like? Are you trying to look older? Then maybe this outfit would be better. So I think that's great advice.
So
for all parents.
Asking questions is a good idea, but the question that you shouldn't ask is, "You're not going out in that, are you?"
Right.
Right. The teenagers are very in tune to what you ask and how you ask it. So you've got to remove the sarcasm from the voice and use the right words and the right tone.
And I would say another tip for
hard.
That. It is hard. And another tip for that is, if you don't know what to do, do nothing. And I'm borrowing that phrase from Vicki Hoffel, who's a parent educator. And I think it's so smart. Parents think I must act swiftly in order to squash this behavior. It's just the opposite. Take a deep breath, walk away from the crazy outfit or the Facebook page or the whatever you just encountered. And if you need to say to your child, I'm not sure I know how to react to this, but maybe we can talk about it later, to buy yourself some time, do that. Mm-hmm. But really, that is your best friend. Take some time.
I was going to say, and sometimes making them wait for the consequence or the reaction is it invokes more thought in the child than just nailing them right off the bat. If you make them sweat it out a little bit, they have time to think about it.
It also removes emotions like anger, doesn't
right.
it?
Right, mm-hmm. definitely.
It lessens them, perhaps,
right.
some. In the break, which you can't hear because you're in Greenville, South Carolina, we were talking a little bit about sex. And sex is a big thing at this age, but the discovery of each other as sexual beings. How do boys and girls handle this differently? And how does that manifest itself?
I think it's really funny because they handle it, they seem to handle it so differently. Girls, you know, they enter puberty a little earlier. They start to mature a little earlier. They are interested in having that boyfriend before the boys are ready and having a girlfriend. And even when it comes to kissing, which is the biggest, you know, the biggest sexual activity among middle schoolers, you know, the guys kind of go along with it because they think they're supposed to. And they'll get teased by their peers if they don't. And the girls being pressured by older siblings or, you know, society, what they see in the media and on TV, think that they're supposed to be making out with boys in the sixth and seventh grade. I mean, just watch iCarly. They always want to kiss, you know. So it's different. And I think it's important, especially for parents of, well, for both, but especially for parents of boys, I think it's a tough conversation to help them learn how to reject sexual advances if that's really what they want to do. And for girls, you know, to learn how to set reasonable boundaries that they think are okay. And what I think is so cool about adolescence is that if you give them time to think about something, they usually come up with a great solution and a great answer, but they're not very good at thinking on their feet. That's that whole brain development thing. The frontal cortex, it's kind of their brakes. It makes them think before they act. And it's not working properly until they're young adults. But it can be trained. So you make them stop and think about what they want to do, and they'll come up with some great answers. So Michelle was talking earlier about, you know, training the brain, and this is a part of that as well. You have to engage them in a conversation that says, you know, what are you going to do if a boy wants to kiss you, or to a boy? What are you going to do if a girl offers, you know, some sexual thing to you? How are you going to respond to that? It gives them time to process it before they're actually faced with it, and they feel better.
But
and they know what to say to protect their own values and their own goals.
But this is an area where peer pressure is particularly strong, particularly on guys, it seems to me. And guys have this reputation of in general, of being how can I put this? Of course, they want to.
Right.
Of course, they want to explore it and have a sexual opportunity. You said off the air, Michelle, that a lot of times the girls want it because they think they're supposed to want it, and guys go through it because they think they're supposed to go through it, but they really don't want to go through with it.
Because they haven't had that opportunity that Dr. Holmes was talking about to think about it ahead of time. It's like they're constantly being caught off guard. And so if you have that conversation with them early on, whether it's about a sexual situation or a social situation, what are you going to do if you see someone being picked on at school? If you begin to have those conversations, and this is not to say that everything is about asking questions. There are areas where I tell my kids what I expect. I tell them what I expect of them in terms of their sexual development and in terms of their social development. So I'll ask questions. At what age do you think it would be appropriate to start kissing? I've asked that question to my kids, and they've given me awesome answers of like 21. I was like, right. You nailed it. But also I will tell them what my expectations are,
right.
You know, in terms of their sexual health and in terms of their social health as well.
Well, and especially with the boys too. Again, they're typically not as communicative. And like we said, when they're put on the spot and have to react in the moment, they're not prepared with the words to use. That's why it's usually funny. The boys will end up, you know, punching a girl in the arm before they say they like her. So yeah. You have to prepare them for what do you say? How do you have that conversation? How do you like a girl without it being awkward and without getting in trouble for hitting her in the arm?
Let's take a call. I'll share some comments that have come in as well as we've had this conversation. And let's go to Concord and Merrill. Welcome to the program, Merrill.
Hi there.
Hi.
I was just calling to comment on peer groups in middle school. I remember in my own experience sitting in the lunchroom in middle school the first several weeks of middle school and meeting, you know, new groups of people. And I remember consciously saying to myself that I'm going to turn from my elementary school peer group, not because I didn't love them, but because I had goals of going to college. And I saw this other peer group that you know, seem to have those same goals. And I consciously made it a choice to spend more time with that group than with my former peer group. And I just think it's so important to understand, to let children know that, you know, they really need to choose their friends wisely, and it is their choice, not just to fall into a group that's comfortable for them. And I just wondered if there's any comments on that.
I love that, Meryl. I think that's so smart, and that's one of the things that we do in Athena's Path and Hero's Pursuit is talk about choices with friendships, how to exit friendships that you have that are unhealthy for you. So many girls in particular will stay friends with someone who treats them really badly because they think, well, she's my friend. They've given her that label, and they don't know how to navigate around that. What you're talking about actually was taking a positive risk, and I think that's tremendous. We have to begin to encourage kids in middle school to take risks, and that seems like a weird thing to say.
Is that friendship with somebody who treats you really badly what you mean when you say frenemies?
Frenemies, yes. Best friends, worst enemies, frenemies.
Why would anybody stay in that situation?
Girls stay in it for fear of being a social outcast and because they're getting something out of the friendship, but it may be marginal. It may be that 80% of the time that friend makes them feel terrible about themselves, but 20% of the time they're getting some social collateral from that person, and there's a big fear of being rejected socially by your peers in middle school. So they're clinging.
Is there a male component to that? Is that why guys hang around with guys who get them in trouble?
There is a bit of status seeking. You want to associate yourself as a guy with whoever the top dog is.
Uh-huh.
You know, we see it in film all the time. In psychological studies, the same thing happens. It takes a slightly different form in that there's less, you know, relational aggression. There's not sort of the gossip piece. But, you know, that's part of the peer pressure piece. And that's why sometimes in bullying situations, we try to target the onlookers because they're following a leader who was bullying. And the onlookers don't say anything because they don't want the bully to ostracize them, and then they become a target for bullying.
And I think in boys' social groups, there's often a mascot. There's that kid who gets teased, mm-hmm. but he thinks I got to hang on here because I'll be a floater otherwise. I don't know which group I'll go in, so at least I belong to a group.
I have an identity, even if I am just the whipping post for the group.
Yeah.
At least I'm part of the group.
At least they notice me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you mentioned gossip a second ago, and you mentioned gossip in your writing, Michelle.
Right.
And that seems to be associated a lot with girls, and it's gossip that is destructive gossip. It's not news and information. It is gossip.
Mm-hmm.
Do guys get involved in that too, in a different way?
Guys are pawns in the gossip game.
Yes.
Absolutely.
They are the runners occasionally.
Yes.
Meaning what?
A lot of times there'll be triangulation. There'll be two parties at odds with each other, and one party will tell a guy, hey, I heard blah, blah, blah about so-and-so, this other party, and then that guy will think he's being helpful and go tell the other girl, hey, this girl's talking about you. She said some negative things. And so then it becomes, well, you tell her that I said, and then the guy runs back and forth. And, you know, like in my case, I'm, you know, was a helping type. Some guys that I've talked to in my counseling office think they're helping, but really what they're doing is throwing gas on the fire.
There's a whole song about this in Bye Bye Birdie.
Yes.
The Telephone Hour.
Yes.
Tom in Huntersville emails, what are some tips when moving to another town and a new school for an 8th grade middle school student?
Well, I would say it's a great opportunity for that child. I'm sure she's feeling upset and bitter, unless she was unhappy in her school. She may be feeling relief.
It could be a he.
It could be a he, yeah. True. But the child is a great opportunity for them to reinvent themselves. So I would say a couple things. Well, I have a post on my blog, 7 Tips for Having the Best Time in Middle School. Mm-hmm. Read that because there are 7 tips for how to enter a new situation.
Your blog is where?
It's on michelleinthemiddle.com under blog. And if you scroll down, you'll come to 7 Tips for Having the Best Time.
Okay.
I would recommend that.
And a lot of it is in how you frame the change also. If you if you play to the child's strengths and say these are your strengths and go with those, then the transition can run smoothly. Also, something, Michelle, I remember you mentioned to me in conversation before was we send our kids to school and say, oh, have a great day, make friends.
Right.
Sometimes, really, it should be strong enough to handle yourself on your own and be the ones people want to make friends with.
It's a lot of pressure to say to a kid, go in and make a bunch of new friends. And so I just tell parents, maybe we should just be saying to them, feel comfortable in your own skin. The friends will come, but
Okay.
The thing I would add to that is if you're eighth grader, and usually by that age, they have a passion of some sort, I would heavily invest in helping support their passion when they change schools, because having that passion allows them to take healthy risks. It allows them to get some positive recognition for whatever they do. And it just, you know, it helps them ease into a situation. We actually had a child that we moved in the sixth grade, and she's a horseback rider. And so, you know, getting her heavily involved in her barn was the best thing we ever did. We looked at barns before we looked at schools even, because we knew that was going to be important to her. And that helped her ease into the transition. So I think all parents should help their middle schoolers identify a passion and help support it, but especially in a time of transition.
Somebody who identifies themselves as ADD mom. I raise three kids, two boys and a girl, and both boys have ADD. I realize that they are developmentally approximately 2 years behind those that do not have it. Does that mean that they were probably in high school before they went through this issue? My daughter did go through this issue in middle school because I remember her coming to me with them with these issues, but I don't know whether the boys were just not talking about it or whether they went through it later. We're short on time, so as quickly as you can.
I was going to say, having ADD doesn't necessarily you're behind, because as you develop as a human being, you're developing in several different domains. Some of those are things that ADD impacts, and some of them are not.
Okay. This seminar that you're having two series of a seminar called MichelleInTheMiddle.com, Right in the Middle is the name of the seminar, in two different locations. Very quickly, tell me what that's all about.
Great. Okay, so August 15th, if you're in or near the Charlotte area, we have a morning session from 9 to 12 and an evening session from 6 to 9. Dr. Holmes, who you heard on today's program, will be joining me along with Rosie Molinari, who is the author of Beautiful You and a body image and acceptance expert. And we're going to be talking with moms and daughters just about how to get it right in middle school, how to forge those connections with your child, and how to help ease the transition through adolescence. And it's going to be a lot of fun, too. Live music, giveaways.
And Doctor, you suggest that parents talk with their children, not at them. I only have 30 seconds, but what does that mean?
That means engage them in a conversation and ask those questions like we've been talking about. They no longer respond to lectures, and because I said so is no longer an appropriate answer for a middle schooler.
And Wes, you've also said that how parents help their children navigate through this period can set the tone for the path they are likely to take through life.
Yes. We never stop developing. Even as a 40-year-old male, I'm still working on where I'm going with career. It never stops.
We asked our Facebook listeners, what would you tell your middle school self? Some answers. Diane said, be true to yourself. Pete said, this too shall pass.
Yes.
Joe said, know who your friends are and be a good friend to them. Michelle Eichardt, founder of Athena's Path, Heroes Pursuit, MichelleInTheMiddle.com, Wes Calbreth, a guidance counselor at Walter G. Byer School here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, and Dr. Melissa Holmes, OBGYN and co-founder of Girl and Guyology. Thanks for the hour.